Developing a classification of the different vocalization styles of early Quranic manuscripts, my project that I'll be starting soon will focus on the reading traditions that we see in these early vocalized manuscripts. But to do so, we need to understand what these colored dots actually mean. And kind of get a sense of what the different systems are and how we should interpret them. And I'd like to explore and kind of develop some kind of typology of what is going on with these systems. I'm not the first one to do this. So Alain Georges, who has just kindly introduced me, has written a wonderful set of two papers about vocalization. Before him, Yasin Dutton. I just noticed today that they were both at Edinburgh at the time they did it, which, I don't know, apparently if you do vocalization, you end up in Edinburgh. So that'll happen to me soon too, I suppose. And also a very important work by Eleonor Sellard on vocalization, especially of earlier C1 manuscripts. I hope to kind of develop further some of these systems. It's widely recognized as a system. It's often talked about. But there are certain details that are not quite picked up on, and kind of understanding how the different systems that exist interact, which ones have been less well documented, and how they might interrelate historically, that's kind of what I want to explore here. So starting with that, I would like to begin with what could be called the Iraqi scheme, the scheme that traditional descriptions, so medieval descriptions of vocalization, have associated with Iraq. So what's that system like? Well, first of all, as I said, it is recognized as a Iraqi scheme, and it uses red ink exclusively, at least to mark its main reading. And this is different from at least one other system that we will be looking at. It really uses red to write Hamza, it uses red to write the vowels, it uses red to write the Arab, the Tanween, etc. And this system has, to some extent, associations with certain script styles. So, for example, the B2 script style that we see here. I don't think there's any example that does not use this exclusively red scheme. And it's indeed true that this kind of system seems to be associated to some extent with Iraq. The B2 manuscripts which use this scheme are all, if not many of them, have a Basran rasm. Their readings also seem to have clear association with Basra. Basra is in Iraq, so apparently it's Iraqi. But also other styles like D1, D4, tend to have this scheme. There are exceptions. For B2, I really don't think there are exceptions, so that's something. So what's going on with this scheme? You'd think if you only have one color and you only have one type of dot that you could not express all that many differences, but you can actually get really, really far. It has a rather complex system of expressing, especially the Hamza. So it uses the dots, and what's very typical is most word internal vowels are not written. When you see dots in the middle of a word, it's almost without fail a Hamza that it's writing. So it's not that as ambiguous as you might think it is. And you get this interesting complex system of positionality, and that really has different meanings. And depending on where in the word a dot is put on a certain letter, it leads to different interpretations. And it's really quite elegant, although sometimes ambiguous. So we get this kind of system with a dot below is for Hamza plus Kasra, a dot after the Alif is Hamza plus Dhamma. And then we get this very subtle distinction with whether the dot is in front of it, and that makes it a short vowel, Anta, or after it, which makes it a Alif Mamduda, Ali. But at the end of a word, things flip around. So at the beginning of a word, it is Hamza plus long A, but at the end of the word, the same position becomes Alif plus Hamza plus Fatha. And for anta, which is hamza plus fatha, but you also get it for yasha, where it's placed before the alif, and that's expressing a fatha followed by a hamza, and then by zero. But the same alif mamduda sign, as we call it, is also used to express, say, antumu, where one of the hamzas has been dropped. And that can be complex, but these things are really described and they're, you know, quite well understood. Then we get the system of the so-called alif muqayyada, which uses two dots, one on the front, one on the back, which can either express a hamza followed by a long a in the middle of a word, or a fatha followed by a hamza followed by a in the middle of a word, or actually just two fathas with a hamza in between, like a naba'a. But also at the beginning of a word, when you want to write antumu with two hamzas, you write it with two dots. So really, a sophisticated system. And also, actually, when the hamza is combined with a waw, some things are really interesting going on with that, like mu'minun or mu'minin. Puts the hamza sign, so the red sign, just after, say, the head of the waw, right? But you also do that if the dhamma follows the waw, if the waw is the seat of the hamza. But it's different when it's not a hamza. So, tawu, the dhamma is actually written at the leg, or I don't know, the jaw of the waw or something like that. And that's really consistent. They really, really keep those apart. So this is just not just a dhamma after a waw, it really is a hamza after a waw. You also get the system that when it's u'ah, with a hamza in between, it's slightly to the left and to the top. Not all manuscripts do this. Some write mu'adhin just with a dot here, but most of them write it here. And that's different from when you write wa, for example, in which case it's right there. Also, when it's a hamza followed by a long u, the dot is written slightly to the left. So it's not written on the alif, but it's actually on the right or on the back of the waw. And a really sophisticated system, and you get really cool things like you can distinguish ula from uli. Uli being written with a waw, but with a short u. And then the dhamma is here. And it goes on like this. This system really has a bunch of sophistication. So the Iraqi scheme also has a way of distinguishing ikhfa from just normal pronunciation of noon. So the noon in Quranic recitation is pronounced with assimilation to the next consonant, unless it is in front of a guttural, like hamza, kha, ghain, ha, ayn. So, what do they do? Well, they cannot express it with normal tanween, but with tanween alif, what they do is they don't write the dots of the tanween when a assimilating consonant follows. So, mathalamma, no fathatain there, but in baghyan an, where it's an, right? Baghyan an, it's written. So, and with fafariqan kadabtumu, it is not written, no fathatan. And here with ragadan haitho, it is written. And that really is consistent. So with these kind of manuscripts, you really see it. There are a couple of exceptions out there that don't do this, but the vast majority that have this full red system really keep this distinct quite nicely. Well, a couple of other things to say about the system. There's a sub-scheme of this system, which is basically the same as what we just looked at, but it uses green dots to write the hamza. That's mostly associated with the D1 style, it seems. I should have also flipped here. There we go. Sorry, I have both my slides in front of me and here. So that's one sub-scheme. And what's interesting about this is it's kind of tricky because there's another system, which is just a normal system, but it can easily be confused with this system. And that has happened sometimes. So for example, here it looks like green is being used to write hamza, but it's actually not. It's being used to write a secondary reading. And how can we see this? We can see very nicely that here the red is actually writing the reading of warsh, warsh al-nafi'a, which says, it doesn't say al-akhiri, but says al-akhiri. And so the reason why there's no dot for the Hamza there is because it doesn't have a Hamza there. And you can see that in places where Warsh does have the Hamza, it is written in red. So this green here is just to write a alternative reading, al-akhiri. And you can see the green is also being used to write other alternative readings. And this one are pretty difficult to keep apart. So you have to be quite careful. But the difference is here the Hamza is always written with green, and here only in places where the Hamza is not pronounced by the main reading. So what else is there? This is kind of the Iraqi scheme, but it's also a Maghrebi scheme. Has been detailed in great detail by Ad-Dani, and has then been described in great detail by Alain, which is really an evolution of the Iraqi system. And seems to be associated with the Maghreb, and for good reason, actually. So one noticeable thing is that it always writes the Hamza with yellow. So even though it uses all the same positions and the positional things to write the Hamza, it uses a yellow color to write it. Another thing about it is that this system really develops a whole set of orthographic tools, like writing wasl and naql, the absence of ikhfa in some other ways, uses dagger alif, starts writing shadda quite consistently. And this system is identified as a Maghribi system, but it actually seems to work out. One thing that Alain Giorgio already noticed was that there's a quite strong association with this kind of vocalization with the D3 and D2 styles, which give the impression that D3 and D2 might actually be Maghribi. And that seems to be further corroborated because almost exclusively, this vocalization style is associated with the reading of Warsha Nafia. That is the reading tradition that even today is the most dominant reading in North Africa. Works nicely. And that is not to say that every manuscript that has Warsha Nafia uses this Maghribi scheme. We just saw a previous manuscript which definitely did not use the Maghribi scheme, but did use Warsh. And also did use, I think that was D3. Yeah, I'll go for D3. So there seems to be a kind of evolution, and I really think this Maghrebi system, it seems that in the Maghreb they used to use this Iraqi system, or the system that we use Iraqi, and then start developing it further to a more detailed version. So one thing it does, it has this complex system of alif al-wasl, where it uses this red stroke, and depending on the height, depends on what the previous vowel is. And then usually they put a little green dot to indicate what the vowel was if you would have started on the word rather than would have spoken in a connected speech. This system is still used today in Maghribi Qurans. This system was never lost. Even when they started developing and started moving away from the Kufic style, they kept this vocalization system. They don't always write this ibtida vowel, but that's pretty common to do. Another thing we see is a system specifically developed to write Warsh. So Warsh has this phenomenon called naql, that is the dropping of Hamza after a word that ends in a consonant. And it's indicated with a green stroke to delete the Hamza, but it's still put at the place where, say, the Hamza would have been had it been pronounced. So you get alula, or al-lard, and even in these kinds of things, minilahin. And this kind of green stroke is sometimes also just used to indicate that a Hamza is missing. Sometimes you just don't write the missing Hamza at all because it's not there, but sometimes they write it, you know, to say muminina or aida with a nice tazheel in this way. Another thing that is really quite noticeable is to have a way of marking this ikhfa that I just talked about, this assimilation that doesn't happen before guttural consonants. They write this nice, cute little red line. And there's some manuscripts where it's actually written as a noon. So it seems to come from a system to say, like, look, this is a noon. And we see in both cases it's there, and it's quite consistently. And even here you can see it is there at the end of tanween. So this tanween, we know for sure that a guttural followed here because there's a little stroke here. So that's kind of a system. There's a whole bunch of other systems going on there. It has a way of writing idgham by a horizontal line on the baseline, which are less frequent. So manuscripts do use that, but less frequently. They have a nice Shadda triangular sign, which really starts developing in later times. Start writing defective elif with his horizontal stroke, start writing Madda. All of this, the real obsession with really precisely showing, say, you know, tajweed features of the recitations of these readings, which are not quite communicated with, say, the old system, the Iraqi system. Such signs really develop further. So if you look at the Palermo Quran, which is a new style Maghribi manuscript, it has the whole system. Everything is there. It's very, very developed. And that continues even today. If you open up a watch Quran, most of these systems are around. So what else is there? Those are the two main ones, and they're very, very dominant. But there are a couple of weird ones, and I can't give them a regional name because there's only a single manuscript that does it. But this is a manuscript called Arab 334A, which I did an edition of, but Eleonor has also looked at it in great detail. And much of what I'll say is based on her observations on this manuscript. So what's going on with this? It uses only red. But it uses dashes, not circles. That's quite surprising. And it doesn't have this complex Hamza marking. It has no alif mandura, it has no alif muqayyada. And to mark the Hamza, it just puts a fatha on top of any letter that has a Hamza, regardless of what vowel follows or comes in front of it, which is what the Iraqi system does. And in that sense, it really feels a lot less developed. It has no way of marking alif al-wasl. Well, it does actually, but it has a very specific way of doing it. It has no way of marking ikhfa. In many ways, it seems more archaic than the Iraqi system. The Iraqi system looks more developed. So here we see the Hamza spelling. And we see, for example, amanu and awliya'a. There's no difference, right? There's no difference in position of this dots to write the alif mamduda. And otherwise, it's pretty similar. It puts a fatha on sayyatan, which you would normally do too, but also in shay'in, where you would not do this in the Iraqi system. You would have nothing at all here. You have jiu kumo, where there's just a fatha on top of the waw to say there's a hamza before this waw. But you kind of need to know this. But it's interesting, it has a way of writing alif al-wasl. So in something like makru layli, what it does is repeats the vowel of the preceding word. Also, you see it mostly with the dhamma, and it's not very consistent, but it's clear with the dhamma when it happens. But sometimes it also does it with a kasra, which is, even at this really high resolution, is hard to see. But here is a dot being repeated from this ar-Rahman. Very typical, and we'll see something return later on with that as well. So there's only one system like this, but it looks archaic in many ways, and it looks different, it's less developed, but interesting. And there's one more manuscript, which is also very interesting, also early, which is the manuscript R38, which is scattered around the place, but most of it is in Tunisia, which also has a very, very strange system. Like Arab 334A, it uses dashes instead of dots, but has no way to mark tanween. It does something weird with the dhamma, we'll see that in a second. It has no way to mark hamza at all. So what's going on there? It seems to do alif al-wasl in a similar way. So in many ways, it seems like an earlier version or an earlier attempt of the Arab 334A style. So, for example, lack of tanween. You see that it uses the same positional dots, but As-sahiru and khayrun are simply written the same. It's just a dot after the thing. And al-ardi or dhahabin, both just a single dot, not double dots like we would expect. What does this mean? Well, it can be explained in at least two ways. This practice had just not yet been invented, that you were supposed to do two dots to write tanween, which is a funny solution anyway. Or maybe this reading tradition that it's representing just did not have tanween. That's possible. We have transmissions of Arab grammarians that say that, you know, there's dialects that did not have tanween, and of course, I mean, most modern dialects don't have tanween, so that could be it. If the first explanation is correct, it had not yet been invented, at least some of the tradition that we have that Abul Aswad developed this system is not quite correct, because the transmissions that we have are not quite precise enough, because the traditions that we have tell us that he said you have to put two dots to put tanween. Well, clearly, this system at least does not have that. What else? Spelling of Dhamma, really strange. So Dhamma usually you write on the baseline after the letter. But this manuscript and this style really hates to put vowels on top of the rasam, on top of the black ink. So what it does is it puts the Dhamma all the way at the end of the word, regardless of whether that's a place where it is nowhere near. So if you have something like Kaumuka, you actually first see the fatha, and then all the way at the end of the ka, you get the Dhamma, while the Dhamma should be pronounced here. And that's really quite consistent. So you also get it in Alihatuna. Once again, Dhamma here, well, you know, it should have been here. And this is a bit difficult to see, but you can see the Dhamma here, all the way at the end. So, and that's not the case for the other vowels, right? Because the other vowels are not in the way of the rasam, so they are on top, below, etc. But the Dhamma comes all the way at the end. Really quite odd. Absolutely no way of expressing the Hamza. It sometimes uses word internal dashes to show a long A. They use a fatha instead. And the only exception that seems to be the case, and I don't know why, is that antum or antumo has a fatha, like every time it occurs in a few folios that I've been able to look at. But all the other ones, they don't write word initial hamza. But for alif manduda, they do write it on the thing. But that seems to be marking the alif rather than the hamza. I see I'm running out of time, but I'm also almost near the end, so I'll wrap it up. Alif al-wasl, it seems to repeat once again the vowel. So yeah, we have muslimuna tchulu, and this vowel seems to be repeating what's here. Very similar to what Arab 34a does. So, to conclude, the R38 scheme really looks like it's the most ancient one. Whether that's really the case or not, it's kind of hard to tell. Arab 334a seems like an evolution of that, but maybe R38 is just the same scheme, it just is representing a reading that did not have Hamza and did not have Tanween. Hard to tell at the moment. The Iraqi scheme is much more developed. It's highly systematized, it is followed by many of the manuscripts, and many of its kind of odd things about the placement of the Hamza, the writing of Ikhfa, is really kept quite closely. The Iraqi system with green Hamza seems to be a widespread innovation, although it never becomes everywhere, or maybe it becomes everywhere, but we don't really know how it sees it. It's certainly the rarer version, with red dots is more often. And then you get the Maghribi scheme, which really seems to be a specialized evolution of the Iraqi system. And I would say, because we can see these D2 and D3 manuscripts, which have the Warsh reading with just a normal Iraqi scheme, I would say the Iraqi scheme is like the normal scheme, and it's the one that was used in North Africa before the Maghribi system started evolving. That is my first kind of impression. There's a lot more to do here still, but kind of get a sense of how these vocalization systems work. And with that, I thank you.